Good morning. You're listening to Listen in Lubbock. I'm your host, Casey Ellingson, the news director here at Texas Tech Public Media. This is our very first episode of our new weekly show, where I'll sit down with reporters from around the region and around the state to dive deep into current issues. I'm sure many of our listeners out there are familiar with today's guests. First, our senior reporter, Sarah Self-Walbrick, and the owner and operator of Latino Lubbock, Christy Martinez-Garcia. Sarah, you've covered the pandemic literally from day one. Can you kind of just unpack how the situation unfolded from your coverage throughout Lubbock?
So starting mid-March, we had our first two cases, and then really the first big news event, I guess, that stemmed after that first case was our nursing home outbreaks. In early April of last year, we saw a horrible outbreak at one nursing home in particular, but a couple of different facilities. You know, this was at the point that we didn't know a ton about how COVID was spreading. The biggest issue was healthcare employees going from facility to facility to care for different patients, things like that. And it was spreading rampantly. I consider that our first big wave in Lubbock, just because our numbers went from, you know, a handful of cases, a literal handful at that point, to, you know, dozens and dozens. And that's when we started to get concerned. We saw a pretty good lull over the summer as things warmed up and people were outside. When colleges resumed in the fall, we saw another huge spike that was, I think in most part attributed to a younger crowd who was out and about, I guess, to put it in the nicest way. I'm not here to judge or anything, but I mean, it was definitely the younger 18 to 24-ish crowd that was driving that spike. And that led to more community spread, which is what we saw through the rest of 2020. I mean, numbers were through the roof for the rest of the year. In October, we started to see hospitalizations become a concern. And luckily those have receded and we're in a much better place. But definitely the end of 2020 was when things got very, very serious and very sad and very scary to be in Lubbock.
Sarah, from all of your COVID-19 coverage, was there a particular story that sticks out in your memory among the rest, and why is that?
Yeah, there definitely is. One of the last stories I did in 2020 was about a young woman who died from complications of COVID. And this story really affected me for a couple of reasons. I think the main one, though, was just that she was a woman my age. She was young, she was healthy, and this got her too. And so coronavirus was definitely real to me before that, but hearing about someone very similar to me die because of it really, really affected me. And that's the hardest one. I still think about it all the time. And it's a tough one.
Yeah. And here's a clip from your story.
When we got to the hospital, they told us they lost her pulse a total of 4 times, brought her back 3 times, and the last one they could bring her back.
Reality quickly hit him.
Seeing her laying there in the bed I've been thinking about that moment a lot, actually.
On the day when I see...
Supposed to wear this suit to get married. So I guess I'll just wear it today.
Instead of reciting his wedding vows to his beautiful bride, Bassett read them at her funeral.
Stephanie, today I wanted to share with you stories of times when I knew absolutely unequivocally that you were the person I wanted to marry.
Part of reporting in a community like Lubbock is a lot of times you know the people you're reporting on. And you knew Stephanie, correct?
I did. Stephanie Smith and I had classes together at Texas Tech. There was one class in particular, news writing, that is notoriously the hardest class in the mass communications program. And we sat next to each other. And I couldn't tell you who sat on the other side of me, but Stephanie and I got through that class together. You know, like we sat together in lab and we were buddies through that. And I'll be honest, we lost touch after that. But anytime I saw her in the hallway, or we actually, she sent me a random message at one point, like years after we had graduated, saying how proud she was and how cool she thought it was that I was a journalist after what we went through the one semester together. She was just, she was an incredible, encouraging, kind person. And so, yeah, that was another layer of why sharing her story was so hard, is because I'm not saying I knew her well, but it was, I mean, I knew her. And that definitely added some extra emotion to it.
Christy, I'm going to bring you in here into this conversation. You've been covering the pandemic, and specifically you've made an effort to get the information out to the Latino community in Lubbock. Is there a particular story that stands out to you from your time focusing on this? And can you share that with us?
There's so many, but you know, with me personally, I experienced 7 deaths of family members in under 4 months. Mm. And my husband lost 3 siblings. He lost, the first one was to cancer. And then in 24 hours, his second brother died to COVID.
Oh my gosh.
So it started the pattern for us. And it was very painful, and it just didn't get any easier. I mean, then the just last week I buried my sister-in-law to COVID, and just the whole experience of that was difficult for me. But getting calls from public saying, you know, I think I might have COVID, but you know, I can't afford to go get a test. What I realized is that we sometimes the city wasn't proactive. It was very reactive to a lot of this. And so I was hearing a lot of those stories, and then just constant, you know, I knew this person. I mean, I remember posting on Facebook on my personal page saying, wow, at this point, I already know this many people that have died of COVID. And so as we came into the new year, you know, it's a new year, and you're excited about that. But at the same time, we came with the loss of many people. So it was very difficult for me personally, because I'm very connected to my community. People know, I mean, I work hard for the public. And I think a lot of folks, they trust me and they know that.
Yeah.
And they know that I put, sometimes I, too often, I put people before myself because I care. I truly care about my community. And so when I have to go up against officials, I'll do it very, I'll do it.
A part of being a journalist in a community like Lubbock is it is sometimes hard to establish a line and remain objective, because we are members of this community. And we also faced a lot of hardships with COVID,
with
like
COVID,
you mentioned.
Yes.
How did you establish that line of objectivity and reporting on this?
It was often very hard because, you know, I knew that there was a lot of people counting on our publication. And I mean, just to give you an idea, when we first started COVID, one of the first questions I asked, is this information going to be translated so that it's available in English and Spanish? Because I know, you know, sometimes it's not that some folks don't know English, it's that they understand better in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they can move, or sometimes it's just Spanish. Well, right off the bat, they said, oh, yes, we'll work on that. But they didn't. And so I had to make it a point to translate this stuff on our own and create a page that people could turn to. And immediately we saw like a 400% increase in the, you know, folks visiting our site, because we were providing those resources. We used every tool that we could to get the information out.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the data that we do not have when it comes to COVID-19. Stay with us. Welcome back to Listen in Lubbock. I'm your host, Casey Ellingson, and I'm in the studio with Christy Martinez-Garcia of Latino Lubbock and our senior reporter, Sarah Self-Walbrick. Today, we're talking about COVID-19. We're a year in. Sarah recapped for us how it unfolded in our community, and you both shared some heartbreaking stories you've covered. I want to switch gears a little bit here to talk about the information, specifically the data that we don't have. Before we get into it, I want to play a clip from one of the city's COVID press conferences that really caught my attention, where Christy, you called out the city officials for the data that's missing. Let's listen to that.
I wanted to, in response to an earlier question, provide some important statistics. First, Hispanics nationwide who contract the coronavirus are hospitalized at 4.1 times the rate of other populations. They also make up 24% of workers in the hospitality industry, which we know was hit hard during coronavirus-related shutdowns. They also have disproportionately experienced COVID-19 deaths over others, including in Lubbock. Some of the city's biggest struggles for the city to connect with this specific audience or audience of colors include cultural incompetency, the lack of representation of staff in significant roles, the lack of translated marketing materials. And this has been pointed out many times. I even asked last week if the city is keeping record of ethnicity and testing, and the response was no, but rather that the crowd looked diverse. And the response to maintaining the testing demographics was that the tracers are not asking, do you guys understand the significance of keeping such data, whether it is testing or vaccine, and that your focus should not be national failures, but what can be done locally to learn from these examples and properly record that data? That being said, will you do more as we move forward?
So Christy, first tell me, why does that matter to you?
Data is so significant when you're dealing with a pandemic or any situation in a community. And the reason is because that's how we learn. That's how we're able to gauge. And so if we're not keeping data, how can we learn from that? I think that's so important for folks that are in significant roles, like city officials, or, you know, they should be connecting numbers to people so that we know, okay, we obviously have an issue here. It reveals so much. And I know when I first asked them about testing, they weren't keeping gender or ethnicity. And I thought that was crazy because there's a lot that we can learn from this. And then obviously when we started doing vaccines, once again, my question was, you know, why are we not keeping data, or what data? And there was no data. And that was disappointing because we didn't learn from when we were doing the testing. Mm-hmm. It's an obvious and very important part of any analysis that we do for the future, as well as, you know, how to prepare for other things, other pandemics, other issues that our community faces.
Yeah, absolutely. And fingers crossed, we will not face another pandemic in our life.
We probably will, though. You know, that's the likelihood, and that's why we need that data so that we know how to deal with certain issues and know how to deal with certain segments of the community, what to bring to them that's a little bit different.
And now, Sarah, you recently talked with the city's public health director, Catherine Wells, about this. What data is actually missing, and did she mention why that's significant?
So the biggest data hole that we have in Lubbock is race and ethnicity. That wasn't tracked well. Starting with testing, we're doing much better with that now that we're vaccinating people. But as of the most recent numbers, about half of that data is missing. For about 50% of the total cases of people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in Lubbock, we don't know their race or ethnicity. It's a big chunk that's missing. And again, like that, it just kind of was doomed from the start when it came to that data point in particular.
A lot of times you bring up data and people's eyes immediately glaze over. But could a lack of data have lasting implications for the community of Lubbock?
Well, I definitely believe that that is an issue. And part of it is, you know, when there's a lot of confusion with folks often. And if you talk to someone that's Latino, Mexican American, Hispanic, Chicano, whatever you want to refer to yourself as, and you ask them what their race is, they'll say, I'm Hispanic, Latino, Chicano, whatever. But that's not their race. Their race, you know, they're talking about ethnicity. And if you're the person taking the data and you ask that question, they're going to say, well, I'm Hispanic. Or if they know, they're going to say, I'm white. So already we have that issue, first of all. And then second of all, if we're not asking them that question, again, we will face that issue later on when we're trying to figure out, you know, who are we not serving properly? Who have we not addressed? So data is definitely a very important part. I even did one day, you know, I was asking the mayor a question about the data, and he says, well, it sounds like you're doing an editorial. And ding, I wrote an editorial. I did my word from the publisher, and I talked about the significance of data. And I know that folks that read it, I had a lot of comments, and they're like, you know, I never thought of it that way, but it is very significant. So you have to actually record the information, you know, then you can offer analysis and follow-up to that data later on.
Absolutely. And Sarah, what information were they prioritizing in the beginning, and why was that?
So both locally and statewide, the initial task was just to count, figure out where people had been. That's what we had to do first so we could control the spread a little bit easier. When cases really started to increase in Lubbock and across Texas, I mean, that became a much more daunting task that required more work. So that's really when we started to see some other data points slip, just because health departments were completely overwhelmed and not well equipped in the first place to track this kind of data in the way that we kind of needed them to. Not their fault at all, but it got overwhelming really, really quick. So on top of just counting cases, one data point that has been tracked very well throughout the whole, again, testing, case counts, and now through vaccinations is age. So we knew early on that age played a factor in how someone responded to the coronavirus. We knew that, you know, when it first started spreading in Asia and European communities, we knew that, you know, we knew that older people seemed to be more affected, younger people seemed to be affected differently and in a less serious way for the most part. So once the virus got to the United States, we knew that we needed to be keeping an eye on that. So age data in particular is one set that is very complete, that in case counts based on testing.
So Christy, you've kind of touched on this, but does this situation speak to a broader issue in Lubbock, especially when it comes to marginalized communities?
Oh, no doubt. As you know, the publisher of Latino Lubbock magazine, someone that's obviously involved in the community, I decided to give the grade for Hispanic women and their role in the Lubbock community. And I gave Lubbock a C minus a D. Part of it is because we've dealt with this pandemic, and Hispanic women have taken on a bigger role because of our, you know, culturally, we're more family oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So some left jobs. You know, there was just a lot of changes. That was one thing. The fact that if you go to City Hall, it's very difficult to find women in leadership roles. If you look at the boards and the commissions, do you see Hispanic women? Very few. Having served on those boards, I can tell you that we're definitely capable. And you just can't not, you know, have that balance. Our communities are changing, and we need to make sure that we're changing with them.
I'm going to pause you there, and we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be back with Christy and Sarah talking more about the pandemic and the numbers that we do not have. Welcome back to Listen in Lubbock. I'm Casey Ellingson, and I'm joined by Christy Martinez-Garcia from Latino Lubbock and Sarah Self-Walberg with Texas Tech Public Media. We've been living with COVID now for over a year, which is so wild to think about. And we've been talking about the information we don't have, specifically the data. Christy, get us back into this conversation. Why should the community care about this?
The public should care about data because it allows us to gauge and learn. We can learn who we didn't serve, where we lack, and it also brings to surface other issues that those particular populations might be dealing with, whether it be children or families with children, or, you know, there's this other information that you need to be aware of. And I think my family has been a perfect example because, like, as I mentioned, between my husband and I, we've had 7 losses in under 4 months. And as I was reflecting on that just the other morning, I was just kind of thinking, and then I realized, wow, on my side of the family, I lost 4 males ranging from ages 7 to 83. And
wow.
I thought, man, that's so interesting. And, you know, and then the different health issues that they had or and didn't, because like my uncle, who was in his 80s, he was in great health. The problem was, is this is where the cultural thing is. You know, we're so family oriented, but somebody brought it into the house, and he'd been wearing his mask, he'd stayed at home, he followed all the rules, but that's where cultural competency also comes to play when you're collecting data and information about people. Mm-hmm. And we're multi-generational families. That was the other part that, you know, you've got to take all that into consideration. And if you don't have folks that have that experience or that knowledge, you're going to overlook it. And so then when you're doing your research and analyzing all this information, that's why it's so important. And that's why it's been a very big part of you know, my discussions and making sure to address it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Christy. Now, Sarah, as we mentioned earlier, you talked with health experts. Did they share with you data points that they wish they had collected along the way?
There are a few. So on top of race and ethnicity, which I think everyone agrees is something that they wished they had better data for, one thing that both Catherine Wells and Dr. Ben King from the University of Houston mentioned to me was households. Asking people how many people live in your household so they could track better if the virus was really spreading in those more interpersonal circles or if we were seeing broader community spread at grocery stores, restaurants, things like that. That would have been really helpful to track how that was happening. I've also seen both from Catherine Wells and Dr. King, a few other data points that they wish they had, income levels. We know a lot of this anecdotally that, you know, lower income communities were more affected. Those are our frontline workers, people who weren't as privileged to get to stay home and socially distance, things like that. But that was another data point in particular that everyone kind of wished that we had. But, you know, it all goes back to when it became so overwhelming just to count cases. I mean, those are that's a lot of additional questions when you're already overwhelmed with the minimum of what we needed. So I think it's easy to say what we wish we had. my heart goes out to anybody who was trying to track all of this, because it was, I mean, it was a daunting task from the start.
Going back to the community spread versus like within the households, do you know if they were counting the spread within households as community spread?
I think it's harder to pinpoint that. We know that here in Lubbock, at least, again, anecdotally, that the smaller gatherings were driving the numbers here locally. But I mean, that was probably in some cases, at least, people outside of your household.
Now, Christy, you mentioned long-term implications for our community of Lubbock, but Sarah, what are the broader implications statewide, maybe even nationwide?
So for me, I mean, it's just the historical context. We're going to have stories. We're going to have that anecdotal evidence of what exactly happened here, but we're not going to have the numbers to back that up. While I was digging into this, I kept thinking about, you know, the journalist 50 years from now who is working on a coronavirus, you know, reflection type story, and how hard it's going to be for them to really say what exactly happened here, because we don't have some data that really would have told us a whole lot. So it's important in the moment, but also just that bigger picture, it's never going to be completely clear. Again, we will have those individual stories and accounts, but we're just not going to have the numbers to back it up. And it's a shame.
Definitely. And my last question, and this is for both of you, has this specific situation highlighted systemic problems?
There is no doubt that we have systemic issues. I mean, I could point out so many, but I don't want, you know, officials to believe that we're here to attack them. We're here to help them. And sometimes things have to be pointed out, especially because, you know what they say, you got to see the world through different colored glasses. And unfortunately, if there's nobody that looks like me wearing those glasses, then that's a concern.
So, Sarah, what are your thoughts on this? Has the situation with data collection highlighted systemic problems from what you've reported on?
I think so, definitely. When it comes to data collection, our health departments weren't equipped for this from the start. And that goes back to years and years of underfunding for public health efforts, and also just the decentralized nature of public health systems in Texas. So I think that's part of it. But it also specifically about race and ethnicity, because we didn't have some of that data specifically about testing. There's no race and ethnicity data in Texas about testing. So when that was still harder to come by, I think not having that data to show that our communities of color were being more affected We couldn't funnel those resources there. And again, we were able to, because we know our community here in Lubbock, but it just made it harder. And things like that, I think that the state kind of realized and worked to improve as the pandemic dragged on. So comparing, you know, no race and ethnicity data for testing, I mean, that's been a priority for vaccinations. At this phase in the pandemic, we have much, much better data. So I do think that this highlighted a lot of system-wide failures, but at least we seem to be getting some solutions and have learned something from this particular issue.
On the vaccine issue, to start off with, they were not collecting that data at first, correct?
Correct. So at the beginning, when we first started vaccinating end of last year, that was not a required question. But now the Department of State Health Services in February made it to where health departments cannot move past a certain point when they're entering their data into a system that without race and ethnicity data, they can't go any further. So basically, yeah, so they've really prioritized that. And started in February. So we have a much more complete data set for that. There are still holes, obviously, but it's a much more representative look at that particular point.
It sounds like they played catch up a little faster with the vaccine than the
testing. Yes, definitely.
We're out of time. I'd like to thank my guests, Christy Martinez-Garcia of Latino Lubbock, and Sarah Self-Walbert from our newsroom here at Texas Tech Public Media. Join me every Friday at 10:30 for Listen in Lubbock on FM 89.1, or go to radio.kttz.org to stream past episodes. For the Texas Tech Public Media newsroom, I'm Casey Ellingson. Next time on Listen in Lubbock, we're looking at city leadership and the barriers that exist to attract diverse candidates. It's been an issue throughout the city's history, and while it's gotten better over the years, today those seats are mostly feasible for the retired or independently wealthy. We'll talk about why that is and what's currently underway to try and fix that. Join me next Friday at 10:30 on FM 89.1 for Listen in Lubbock.